adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
Benvenuti tutti to Rete This Way, a calcio podcast that brings the latest and greatest from the world of Serie A and particularly now European soccer. My name is Michael D'Angelo, and as always, with me I have Paolo Noboloni Mangoni.
Welcome back, everyone.
And of course, Mr. Chris Baselli.
Hello, everybody.
And also Adriano Celentano.
Hey, welcome.
He's with us as always, too. Pregero! Why are we praying, Paulo?
Because Chiesa scored.
Take me to church! Play that too. Oh, God. Hey, this is another reaction pod for, of course, post-Italy matchups here. And yeah, we have, I guess, quite a bit to get through. Of course, no Julian Padu D'Angelo today.
He was given the night off today.
He was given the night off. We said, you know what, take it easy. You know, we want to send the best wishes to his soon to be Mrs. Padu. It's her birthday weekend, so they're celebrating, of course. So again, best wishes. But the show must go on, of course, and the three of us, you know, do what we can to make sure that it does. So. With that, why don't we talk about, let's talk about the game, boys. Okay, I'm going to set it up this way. Let's have it more of like a free-for-all here. Let's kind of get through everything. But we'll talk about, obviously, the starting lineup, stuff that happened in the game, of course, and then just what we thought of everything else going on here. But I guess let's start first with that starting 11. So does anybody have it up? I have it in front of me, I think.
The only change from the Switzerland game was that Verratti was in instead of Locatelli.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. It was the same lineup as one of the first two games, except exactly Verratti, who is now finally fully fit, presumably made it in place of Locatelli.
I guess, and technically, because didn't Chiellini start the Switzerland game?
Right, as well in for Chiellini. Right.
Mm-hmm. I would say, I feel like the majority of Azzurri fans would have expected Verratti to start for Locatelli, so I don't know if that was a surprise for most people. We can debate later whether that was the right call or not, but I expected Verratti to see there and was happy to see him there. I know the one argument a friend of the show was trying to make in favor of Locatelli was that with Verratti in there and it being Verratti, Jorginho, Barella, there isn't much size for the midfield three, and that is a fair point. It is a rather small group. And then his second point was that Locatelli kind of offers that ability to shoot from long range that Jorginho, Barella, and Verratti don't really have, which again was another valid point. My main counterpoint to that was that Verratti is the better passer when it comes to comparing him with Locatelli. And, you know, my logic was that if Austria is going to sit back the way they did for the most parts of the game, that Verratti would be the better one to play that, you know, that incisive final ball to lead to a chance. So, the other one I would argue is Bastoni for Acerbi. Mm-hmm. Paolo, what did you think about that?
I mean, overall, he did play somewhat of a solid game. I was just more worried about the fact that, Chris, as you said, Austria sat back all game, and definitely there was some points during that game that I was terrified that Italy would concede on their counterattack. I counted numerous times where Italy was caught backtracking, going back with four Austrian players against three Italian defenders, or sometimes 4v4, and that led to the chance, which we'll get into later, which was eventually called offside. So I thought that Bastoni would have been a better option to combat that threat that Austria posed on the counterattack.
So you're just saying because of Bastoni's pace, he would have been better equipped to deal with defending the counter?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so I would agree with that, and I would go one step past that and also say that, in my opinion anyways, Bastoni is a better passer of the ball, specifically, those 30 to 40 yard diagonal balls.
Correct, yes.
So again, for against countries like Austria who are going to sit back a bit more, I think Bastoni could have been a bit more productive than Acerbi. But overall, I thought Acerbi had a solid game. There was one moment, I can't remember if it was late first half or early second half, where he misplayed a pass and it led to a good chance for Austria. But other than that, you didn't really notice him too much, which is a good sign for him.
Chris, and on last episode, you were talking about who should start up front, either Immobile and Belotti. I think we got an answer to that question today in this game.
Sorry, Paula, repeat that last part. It just cut out for me there for 10 seconds or so.
So I said that we discussed last episode that who should start in this game, whether right. it be Belotti or Immobile. And I think we got an answer to that question by the end of this game.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on Team Belotti since the Czech Republic pre-season or pre-tournament game. But again, I'm not surprised that Immobile starts. I feel like Mancini's kind of locked into that there. But yeah, this was not Immobile's. I thought his link-up play was probably the worst part of his game today. And, several times when it looked like Italy had a chance to counterattack Austria, they just needed that little ball, that little flick around the corner from Immobile to in Barella or Verratti to get through. And it broke down because of his first touch or his poor decision-making. And most of the time you could see Mancini, throwing his hands in the air or turning around, looking at his assistants to vent a little bit. So yeah, he didn't have a good game. And again, I would hope to see Belotti start against Portugal or Belgium, but I'm not holding my breath because I think Mancini's locked in on that starting spot.
So when you compare it to the group stage games, that link-up play, Chris, that you mentioned was fundamental to all of those wins. Well, excuse me, two of those wins since Immobile was on the field. But today, Chris, as you mentioned, it wasn't there because Austria played your typical two banks of four. And it's very difficult to break down teams by playing in and around the box, which is the way that Mancini likes to have this Italy team to play. And the game changed. I hate to get ahead of everything, but the game changed when Belotti came on, when he added that physicality that was missing because Immobile was just being pushed around by Hinteregger and Dragovic. So, Chris, you mentioned that Italy has to play Portugal and Belgium. Okay.
Or Belgium, yeah.
Or Belgium, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Or Belgium. Now, Portugal has two big imposing defenders, Pepe and Ruben Dias. Belgium, same story. Two impose Alderweireld and Vermeulen. And
Vertonghen.
And Vertonghen.
Well, Vermeulen is there, but I don't expect him to start.
Exactly. Either way, all three of them could have a chance to start. So you're telling me that based on this performance, that Immobile got effectively shut down by Hinteregger and Dragovic, you're telling me that he should go up against Ruben Dias, Pepe, or the Belgian defenders? I mean, based on this performance, I'd rather have someone who will go there and fight for every ball and challenge those defenders so they can force to make them make mistakes and have a better chance of putting the game to bed before extra time.
I would just say, though, I feel like Belotti has that advantage because he was coming on and, you know, he's seeing just like, you know, what Mancini's seeing, that, you know, their Immobile is not getting, you know, not getting aggressive enough, etc. So, I mean, aside from halftime when you can talk to the player like in face to face and say, hey, you need to be more aggressive, etc., Belotti has the advantage of, okay, I know what I have to do when I go out there, and he does that. Not that Immobile would have done that if he was coming on. I just feel like he had it's a possibility, you know what I mean? Like I don't think that automatically just having Belotti in there improves the physicality. I think having Immobile off of there, though, definitely hinders the ability to have, again, a poacher up front like that who can make sure you're finishing something when it's, you know, a couple yards out at least, right? And I'm not sure I saw that from Belotti in the couple games that he played.
Okay, so Michael, I do understand your point, but the thing is that Austria kept Immobile essentially out of the box where he's the most effective.
Right, exactly.
So forced them to a long shot that isn't officially considered a shot on target. Okay. So I just want to make that point clear, by the way.
Right.
Because some people are mentioned that Immobile created...
God, you're such a little loser, you.
...created the Italy's best chance. I'm like, oh, well...
He created a chance, yeah. I mean,
No. The quote was Italy's best chance, even though they scored two goals.
But did he create their best chance of the first 90?
That was actually, Barella, in my opinion, had a shot on target and actually forced a good save from the Austrian goalkeeper. Immobile, in my opinion, that shot was 30-35 yards out and easily could have went over the bar. Right. So, I mean, to me, that's not a clear-cut chance. Barella's chance, to me, was a more of a clinical chance that perhaps on another night he could have finished.
Right.
Yeah, so just back to Belotti. I mean, we could – you do make a good point, Mike. I feel like we could go back and forth, though. You know, Belotti's coming off the bench. He has the benefit of seeing how the game is going and getting extra instructions. But, you know, the one game he did start in was against the B squad, if we can call it that. So is it fair to judge his output, you know, without playing with? So you could go on and on. Really where I'm coming from is that, again, in my opinion, I feel that Belotti can do more with less. So in the games where it's going to be, you know, the one striker, Belotti in this case, up against, you know, two strong center backs, I think Belotti over Immobile can make something happen out of nothing or with very little support, more so than Immobile. That's really what it comes down to at this point. I think, you know, against your Hungaries and your Finlands and those kinds of countries, you're probably going to get a similar output from Belotti and Immobile. I've always been kind of thinking long-term, the deeper Italy goes in this tournament, Belotti's the guy that's going to be able to come up with that one goal to win the game for you. So that's where I'm coming from. Sorry.
And you know what? I honestly, I do agree with you. I don't want to sound like I'm being contrarian just to be contrarian. I think that's the right answer. I think that, you know, when you have the teams like you're saying, the smaller teams perhaps where even Immobile can feast on them, right? Like Belotti, if there's a guy who you want to make sure you're finishing the balls, like that's the guy. So I agree with that for sure.
So then the other sub, which obviously was an impact sub and we saw it coming, was Chiesa for Berardi. So not only did Chiesa score, but he did make an impact beyond his goal. Where do you guys stand? Like, are you guys completely sold on Chiesa should be starting in the quarterfinal match, or do you still think Berardi has a leg to stand on?
Paul, you go first.
So before this game, I said, okay, give Berardi 60 minutes to see what he can do and, you know, throw on Chiesa as an impact sub in with 30 minutes to go. Right. So I thought Chiesa coming on for Berardi came way too late. This game could have been won in normal time if Chiesa would have came on with 30 minutes to go. Okay. And now for the fact that I have to say this because I have to comment on, you know, some people's flawed logic because they're somehow quote unquote experts.
Yeah, just don't even subtweet them. Just call them out by name. We'll get.
No, I don't like doing that. I don't like calling out people by name because they should realize that they're making these terrible logical connections. So again, one person said that Kaze's place is an impact sub, and I thought to myself, how wouldn't you want more of that impact on a longer period of game? I mean, shouldn't this performance say to his manager, okay, listen, I think that this player can have a more of an impact if he would be given an hour instead of 35 minutes. So why can't, you know, Kaze demonstrate his abilities in big games, because the rest of the games that are coming up are big games, like he did with Juventus. I mean, we talked about it all last season, Michael. When Juventus needed a goal scorer,
Kaze was their man. Anything, a playmaker.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is coming down. You're not playing Switzerland, Turkey, or Wales anymore. You're playing now. You're either playing in the next round, Belgium or Portugal. You need quality. You need composure. Composure is a key one, because what really pissed me off was Berardi's lack of composure in front of net. He could have killed off that game before Kaze had come on.
Yeah, and he had some weird, stupid shot that he tried to take, right?
Exactly. When instead of taking it down like Kaze did, Kaze took it down with his head, had the composure and the confidence in his ability to switch it to his left foot, and slot it home.
Yeah, and actually, that's probably, Paul, that's a really good point, because that's a direct comparison of the two players, right? What in that exact opportunity, what do they do with it, right?
And exactly,
I will say though, I don't want to give Berardi as little of a leash as you are giving him, but I do think that it is getting smaller for sure. Because for me, I mean, possibly because he plays for Juventus, and I know what Kaze is capable of day in and day out. I want him to start over Berardi. But I think Berardi does have, you know, especially in the first couple of games, he was playing very well, especially with just the 11 that was out there. But maybe, you know, maybe that's the competition. And maybe, you know, if it's a higher competition, you need someone who can be a impact player for you, as opposed to someone who is just a piece of a cog there at that point, or a cog in, you know, the larger operation. Maybe you do want Kaze out there. I'm not saying that, for sure, I think he takes the starting spot next week, because I think he is very effective as a sub, because he has the opportunity to do just that. He's completely rested. He's coming on, and everyone else, you know, the defense is tired, et cetera. What he does becomes even, it becomes magnified even or intensified, because he has the ability to come on fresh when everyone else is tired. So I don't hate it. I don't hate if that's what's going to happen next game as well. But to your point, I think, you know, maybe put him on in earlier on instead of in the 83rd or wherever the hell he came on. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I didn't understand. If you're taking off Verratti and Barella and then putting on Locatelli and Pessina, might as well throw on the other two players that came on later in the game.
Yeah, because I don't know. I don't know what you're doing at the point. You're just taking your starters off. You're not really changing your attack. You're just kind of subbing, you know,
tired players.
Exactly. So does that really impact what you're lacking in that game at that point? I don't think it is.
And I mean it. That I mean not adding any offense. Any new energy in the offensive third three mm-hmm. players actually had a damaging effect on Italy. I found that especially on the offside goal, they were slow, lethargic. I mean,
why don't we talk about that? Let's kind of get through it. So what exactly happened?
For the offside goal.
Sorry, I'm just gonna jump in quickly on mm-hmm. the Chiesa Berardi thing. So
okay, before sure.
Yeah, just very quickly. So I would say that Chiesa has done enough to earn a starting spot. I get your point, Mike, about, you know, him coming off the bench when legs are tired kind of magnifies his performance. But I think that only applies when the guy that's starting instead of him is still putting in, you know, a quality performance. And yeah, I don't think that was the case, at least not today. And then the other, again, I am in favor of Chiesa starting over Berardi. But the one little thing that is worth noting is that Berardi was going up against Alaba, who, if you ask me, if Alaba was, you know, specifically classified as a left back, you could easily argue that he's a left back in the world. I know Alphonso Davies gets a lot of, you know, shouts there, and maybe Jordi Alba at Barcelona, but you can easily make that case that David Alaba is the best left back in the world. So for Berardi to go up against him, it was never going to be easy. And then when Chiesa came on shortly after that, Alaba was moved into center midfield. So again, I'm not saying Chiesa had it easy and that's why he scored. He still had to work for it. He still right. did well, but it is worth noting that Berardi was going up against a world-class left back and Chiesa was going up against, I don't even know who it was. So just to point that out. Anyways, yeah, I just wanted to mention that before you guys moved on to the offside goal.
Yeah, it's fine. That's yep. a very good point.
So, yeah, go ahead, Paulo.
I believe it was a free kick. Yeah, no, actually, no, it was, first of all, it should have been a foul, number one. There was a foul on that play that Anthony Taylor didn't call, and it led to a ball in the box that was flicked on by Hinteregger, which came down to Arnautovic, but his knee was just offside. And again, to me, it was the fact that you threw on two midfielders and you did have any new energy in your front three players who were trying to press the ball down. So Austria managed to break Italy's press because it wasn't coherent because they were all tired. Got lucky with a referee mistake, which we'll get into next, because in Italy they made a whole big stink about it, of having an English referee, and I'll get to that later. But and then got lucky with VAR, because I saw it on the first on the replay. I knew right away that Arnautovic was offside.
Yeah.
So this game wasn't straightforward as everyone thought that it was going to be.
No, of course not.
And it wasn't straightforward because Mancini didn't adapt to Austria's tactics, in my opinion, or if he did, made those changes too late. If he was going to bring on Belotti and Chiesa, he should have brought it on with Locatelli and Pessina, because then it would have made a coherent unit change instead of piecemeal, which I thought led to that offside chance.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think the changes. Those changes specifically came a little too late, but again, we're at this point, it's, I guess, moot because they end up winning anyways, right? It just takes some extra time to get those, to find those goals. But you're right. Those goals could have come within the 90 minutes. And I truly believe that. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree with what Paulo was saying there. It's, the commentators kind of said it too, that, you know, Italy got lucky that VAR, you know, is instated right now, because without mm-hmm. VAR, that goal probably stands, and then they're chasing the rest of the game. So that was kind of their get out of jail free card. And
mm-hmm.
I was kind of hoping for a better reaction, to be honest. I was hoping that was like their oh shit moment. Like, okay, like we're in this. Austria's has pushing a chance us. At co- yeah, yeah, Austria's pushing us. And I didn't really see that. So that mm-hmm. was a bit of a disappointment, but obviously the result still worked out in their favor.
And there was another, we'll call it scare, where kind of, I want to say Lahmer kind of ran into Pessina's elbow.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the chance where it was, again, it was flicked on, I believe, by Hinteregger again, I think.
Yeah.
But again, Lahmer was offside. But let's say if Lahmer was not offside, that's a penalty.
Yeah, I was going to say that was probably more for me what ended up being their oh shit moment, because I think then after that, Mancini makes his subs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, because again, we're talking about the referees now. Yesterday, or yeah, the previous days, our another friend of the show, quote unquote, Ivan Zazzaroni, used his editorial page in the Corriere dello Sport and titled his article Inglaterra, okay? Because he was outraged at the fact that UEFA placed a English ref as the ref of this game because of the political outcry that the Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi stated that why should they play the final at Wembley when there is an uptick in cases of COVID in England. So, again, now...
Politics, tell us about it.
I think Zazzaroni was a fool to write that article, and I believe it conditioned the game as well, which allowed referee Anthony Taylor to allow some calls to go and made it harder for Italy to play their game. Because there's a you get a feeling when you watch Italian clubs play and the ref, especially in Europe, when the ref doesn't give them calls, they seem to go down more often. Okay, that's just an observation that I've made over the years watching Italian clubs play in Europe, and for me that actually hindered the Italian play and allowed Austria to get back into the game, which is what led to that offside goal, which was an Italian player went down, according to the referee, a bit too easily, allowed the play to go on, and almost conceded a goal.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't say that article would have influenced the referee's decision-making. I mean, I don't think he did a great job refereeing today, but he is a professional and he is at the highest level. So I want to believe that, you know, that article didn't influence him. Now, I will say that there were some, you know, questionable decisions. But what I want to add too is, you know, there were three or four instances where the Italian players were looking for a foul, and on two instances it was Verratti, and he went down very easily. I'll call it what it is. He went down easily and Anthony Taylor didn't call it. And to be honest, I was okay with that, because that is one thing that I despise in the game is when players go down very, very easily. I get, and there's always going to be that little embellishment where you get hit and you make it look worse than it is. I get it. But when you barely get hit or don't get hit at all and you go down, I have a problem with that. So a couple times that happened to Verratti, didn't get called. Good. But then on the flip side, when the Australian players were doing it, he seemed to miss it and he seemed to call the foul. Sorry, what did I say?
Australian.
Yeah. They're not European. when the Austrian players did it, it did get called. So I can see how the players would get frustrated, back to Paulo's point. So a lack of consistency was probably my biggest issue with him.
Again, so it's just the foolishness of the Italian media, in my opinion. You know, you're giving these people an excuse to kind of try to screw you over, in a sense. You know what I mean? So yeah, all he had to do was just keep his fucking mouth shut and allow the game to be played. But no, always, you know, the man that man is just always the center of the attention and has to say something really stupid to almost cost them the game.
I love to open it up to the possibility of a conspiracy. I just don't think that it's like it's likely in this case. But I mean, you're right. It is possible that it did play a hand in it. Now, I'm not saying it didn't, but I'm not saying it did either. I don't think there's enough there to say that it did.
I'm not connecting the two, but I'm just stating what happened, okay, and how the game has played out.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Fair. He wrote an article, and the game played out this way. Fair.
Exactly. Yeah.
100% fair.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Yes. Yeah. No. And to me, that's just frustrating, because you don't want to give referees any excuse to hinder your team, and I do appreciate former Italian referee Roberto Rossetti, who's now the UEFA coordinator, come out and defend Anthony Taylor as a professional, and rightly so, he should. And admonished the Italian media for saying such stupidity in the first fucking place. Michael.
OK, Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I hit Siri by accident here. So good. I didn't hear the last part. I heard something about admonishing, and you're right. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What else do we want to get through quickly before we wrap things up here? Because I think that it, well, I guess we didn't really talk about the goals. So let's just quickly, you know, Chiesa's goal was very, we kind of alluded to it, but it was, you know, he took his chance like Berardi didn't. He gets the ball in. He kind of, he makes sure that he has control of it. He allows the player, the defender, I guess, to kind of pass him because he passes it behind him and then he takes it with his left foot. And it's a beautiful shot. And finally, you know, Italy break through where they couldn't for 95 minutes before that.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. And then the, you know, after that, it was Italy seemed to press a lot more. They had a lot more swagger and confidence. And then in the 105th, I believe it is, that's when Piscina ends up finishing his own. You know, he cuts it back to himself while it's in the box. It's kind of bouncing around, but he gets it again and he slots it across. And that ends up being the winner because in the 114th minute, Kalidic scores off of a corner where, you know, I'm not sure what the defenders were doing. There was no one on the post. It looked like up or something, right? Yeah. And it just, it happened. And it's unfortunate because it ends Italy's not conceding run. But luckily, that with only 6 minutes left in the extra time there, it is in enough for Austria and Italy take the game 2-1.
So, Chris, I just want to, you're probably going to mention the same thing as I am, but I was just disappointed the way the team reacted in trying to defend that that 2-0 lead. You just made subs, you know, just 30 minutes ago, but yet as soon as they took the 2-0 lead, they kind of just stopped playing. They stopped playing, allowed Austria to put on pressure, and then made very simple mistakes that should not be made at a professional level. For example, a friend of the show was messaging me, and he mentioned Jorginho coming off the post on that corner.
Was it Jorginho who was on the post?
It was Jorginho on the post, yeah.
Yeah.
Never come off the post on a corner. If Jorginho was still on that post, that does not go in. Exactly.
No. And that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, who was supposed to be there? And yeah, like it was just unfortunate because it's, you know, it ends up doesn't really cost them. But you'd never want to show any sort of weakness in your armor, right? So
exactly.
It's just, it's of course, it's unfortunate.
I would add too, yes to Jorginho's positioning, but I think it was Locatelli's positioning as well. Like Locatelli is on the wrong side of the striker. He's on the side closest to Austria's goal, right? If he's goal side, maybe he doesn't get to the header first, but he's going to make it a hell of a lot more difficult for him to angle it the way he did. So there's a couple things you could look at there. But just regarding the goal, yes, you know, the streak's done, but to be completely honest, I would rather the streak be done in a game like this so that they can kind of just refocus and not have to worry about this streak and how long it goes on for with not conceding. They can just kind of worry about just winning the next game and not keeping a clean sheet. Obviously, a clean sheet should always be the goal, but for me, if I would rather just kind of get it out of the way in a game like this.
Right.
You know, I definitely concur with Chris said. I mean, it was just frustrating for me because, again, this game could have been closed out in normal time. This game could have been a lot more, a lot better managed in extra time. So, if I'm Belgium or Portugal, you know, and I'm looking at this Italy team, and I'm seeing that, okay, there's definitely some weaknesses in the squad, and that is their defending. Who would have thought in the modern age of football that the weakness of the Italian national team is defending?
Yeah, I mean, if you have, I mean, right now it's not the case because Chiellini is out, but if you had two of Juventus's starting defenders starting for your team, I would have said it, because this is exactly like the specifically, I mean, not the age, et cetera, like that obviously is a little bit of an issue. But what I've noticed over the past probably five seasons now, maybe four seasons, is just to talk club quickly here. Juventus are terrible on set pieces, terrible on set pieces. That is their biggest weakness. So if you are able to, I mean, especially with those two in the back, again, Chiellini's off there now, but Bonucci is 100% a bomb that you have to deal with game in and game out, whether you're, you know, Juventus or Italia here. But yeah, if you're putting pressure on the defense, they're going to make a mistake.
Chris?
Yeah, no, they're good points. I mean, if you have to pick a weakness, I would point to their back line. That being said, I don't think it's a huge glaring weakness. I mean, Di Lorenzo has been playing well. Spinazzola, I think, has, you know, three man of the matches now, two or three. And then, you know, whether it's Acerbi or Bastoni in there, they're solid players. And like Mike touched on, Bonucci is usually good for one blunder a game. So you just have to be prepared to deal with that mentally.
Yeah. Is it just me being an alarmist that I would rather see Bastoni? Or that I'd rather see
over whom,
but like over Acerbi and Bonucci, I'd rather see Toloi and Bastoni start than Bonucci and Acerbi, because A, they're more mobile, especially like it's just they're more mobile and they would able to contend with the speed that Belgium or Portugal would offer.
Yeah, I would. I mean, for me, even though I don't really like the guy, Bonucci, I think still can play a part in this squad. I think, again, it is a weakness, but I feel like he does have a place here. But if Bastoni comes in, I think he comes in for Bonucci. I don't think he comes in for Chiellini. I think Acerbi is the right man to take that spot. But I can see if Bonucci was having a horror show of a tournament, then 100% yes. But I haven't seen that yet.
But anyway, Chris, so if
Chris, it's Belgium, well, Chris, what does Chris think?
Okay,
I would actually support Paul's idea.
Ooh.
Yeah, I like the idea of having some more mobile center backs, and I think a Bastoni Toloi pairing would work well, but we'll never see it.
Yeah,
not this tournament, anyways.
I was about to say if it's Belgium, I hope Bastoni starts. Just because, you know, you have two teammates who train together day in, day out during the season. Bastoni probably knows Lukaku inside and out. That's just my opinion.
I think it'll end up being Chiellini. I think he's going to play.
We'll see. I don't know if he's, because it was a kind of a thigh pull. So those usually take a couple weeks. So I don't know if he's going to be even game fit for in time for Friday.
He did say he got it just in time.
What do you mean?
Like he that he took himself off the field. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the game was June 7th, and when's Italy's next game? Is it Friday they would play?
Yes.
So I mean, you're at 1, 2, 3, almost 4 weeks at that point. So if he's not healthy by then.
It was not June 7th. It was
The tournament game.
It was the second game. So it was June 14th.
So was that the Switzerland game?
It was the Switzerland game.
Not June 7th. June
16th. 17th,
Yeah.
16th.
So
2 weeks.
Two and a half weeks, yeah.
Yeah. By next Friday. I don't think that's enough for a thigh pull, in my opinion. Well, I'm not a doctor, but usually that takes about 3-4 weeks to kind of heal properly. Mm-hmm. So, anyway,
we'll see.
If it's Belgium, Bastoni should start. That's my opinion.
Mike, did you want me to put you guys in the spot with my question?
Yeah, I'd love for that.
All right, so this question just came to me while I was watching the game. So, as we know, obviously, Robbie Mancho's Azzurri manager. Who do you guys think from the current squad will be a manager when their playing career is done?
Chiellini, I want to say.
I was almost going to say, and Chiellini doesn't count, because I feel like Chiellini is the easy answer.
Okay, I'll think of someone else. Paulo, do you have a guess?
That's a good question. It's hard to forecast, like, some, looking at the squad now, saying who's going to be a manager.
Honestly, Bernardeschi.
So you're going to laugh at this, Mike. So that was going to be my pick, mainly because his playing career is going to end very shortly because no club wants him. And he's going to turn to coaching at an early age. So he'll have that advantage of getting coaching experience at a younger age. So,
you know what, though? And to that point, too, I don't know that he doesn't have the smarts for the game. I think he doesn't have the skills necessarily. Mm-hmm. So as much as he, you know, makes a fool of himself by accident, probably a couple times a year, I really think that he has the ability. It's just, it's unfortunate, or sorry, he has the, maybe ability to coach or be smart with the game. He just doesn't have the technical skills.
Fair enough. Paulo, who are you thinking?
Honestly, I could see Verratti coaching later on in his career
back at Pescara.
Yeah, exactly. just like another Abruzzese, Eusebio Di Francesco.
Cagliari legend.
Honestly, you know what, Chiesa, because Chiesa can do anything, and he will do everything and anything.
Has his dad managed?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't think so either.
But you know, he kind of reminds me of Zola in a way. Just
I see that too. Maybe it's the face.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is.
All right. Well, I was just curious to get your thoughts on that. Came up to me during the game, and
we'll have to get Padu's thoughts.
Yeah, he's gonna say Bastoni for sure.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah. Lukaku. The cluck.
I'm pretty sure we covered everything. I don't know if we're missing anything.
I think so. Was there anything glaring that we missed? I think just, great. They finished the round of 16. They're off to the quarters. So let's, what do we think about, who do we think it's going to be? Is it going to be Portugal or Belgium?
Chris, go first.
Belgium for me. Portugal, I mean, they got lucky against Hungary. I mean, I know that they scored that first goal in the 81st minute, and then Hungary had to push. So, you know, if you look at the scoreline, you say 3-0, it doesn't tell the whole story. Germany handed it to them. I loved watching Germany outplay Portugal. Mm-hmm. And then the France game was just kind of a penalty kick fest. So,
Ronaldo.
Yeah. So Belgium for me.
Okay. So I definitely think it's going to be an open game. I think there's going to be at least more than 3 goals in this game. And I think Portugal is going to do it. I just have that sinking feeling it's going to be Portugal. And then the storyline is going to be, Bonucci goes up against this teammate again, Cristiano Ronaldo. You just know it's going to be that type of storyline. So I'm just waiting for it.
What about you, Mike?
I think it's going to be Belgium. Who do I want it to be? I think just for my pool, Portugal, perhaps. I can't remember if I said. Oh no, I said Belgium. So I don't know. I think Italy has a better shot against Portugal, and it would be nice to see them on their way to the final to, take the defending champs out of it. So that's what I want to happen. I think it's going to be Belgium, though.
Yeah.
Score prediction.
I think I said in my, like, I agree with Michael. On paper, it's probably gonna be Belgium, but again, I just have this sinking feeling it's gonna be Portugal. But like I said, I think it's gonna be like either 3-2 Portugal, 3-2 Belgium, something along those lines.
Yeah, I think I think it has the potential for goals. I would still put it at like 2-1 though, something like that.
I'm gonna go
for Belgium.
I'm gonna go off the charts. It's gonna be 1-0.
Ooh,
really? I can't see that happening though.
I know, that's why I'm picking it. Yeah, I wouldn't know.
All right. For Belgium?
For Belgium, yeah.
Okay.
Alderweireld.
Oh. I hope you put your money where your mouth is.
I was going to say, I got to go see what Bet365 is going to give me for that. No, it'll be a good game, though, for sure. And that's 3 p.m. Eastern. So looking forward to that one.
Well, Michael, I think we covered everything.
All right, great. Well, you know what? That's it for us then. We'll be back, I guess, in a week's time almost. That's pretty incredible, but that's the way the cookie crumbles in these tournaments. But we'll be back shortly with our next, I guess, segment here on the quarterfinal game between Italy and either Belgium or Portugal. So we'll see you then. And until then, enjoy the rest of the tournament, because it's actually been a very fun tournament to watch so far. All right. We'll see you then. Ciao.